I'm interrupting this message right at that point. If you want to hear the rest of it, just stay tuned to the network or be here next Easter. I'm live now. Most people don't want to apply ordinary brain power to religious matters. Those eight facts are a lot easier to demonstrate, much easier than the resurrection. So if you want to believe those eight facts, restrict the argument to whichever one you don't believe. That's much easier to prove than resurrection. But don't discuss the resurrection unless you take those for granted. In taking those for granted, I went on in the message to explain all the theories and why they reduced down to just two, and why I ultimately, after 3.5 years, became convinced by the evidence he came out of that tomb. And that'll be my Easter message next year. I'm here to address something else this afternoon, something very, very serious. I'm not sure my congregation really understands how close the devil came to accomplishing the big one 2 weeks after we move into the cathedral. All over the same problem that I have dealt with staff, and the carnality that, if it cannot be faced, will destroy each of you. I'm going to ask the director to stay with this camera right in front of me. Stay with it. No other camera until I finish this speech. And I'm looking around to a live audience, and you that are there with the camera, you're just one, wherever you are in the home, among the many people I'm talking to. So I don't want to be distracted at this point because of the seriousness of what I'm dealing with any other camera or any movement. Unless you were in the service today, you won't know what I'm talking about. A door that is never to be opened during the service. Shortly after I wrote the text on the board and turned around, it's open with a group of people going out the door. It's on the darkened right side. And the regular entrance is framed with bright marble behind it. I can see everything that goes on in that foyer, and I have an ability to adjust to just about anything. A king's house. Well, let's back up and tell the story. The door just opened. And I stop in my message. But I don't know what's happening. They're moving pretty fast as they're going out the door. For all I know, somebody, because I've got sleepwalking security sometimes, somebody's grabbed a Bible and is out the door. That's the same door they took the Rembrandt out. All I know is that a clear order, it would be the equivalent of somebody in here while I'm teaching rushing out this door behind me here. I mean, I'm going to react. And I did. And I was only partially as angry as I am now, as the anger has mounted, for what the devil almost accomplished through the ego of self-justifying, prideful men. And I'm stopped in my message . Why are people going out that door? Now, members of the congregation would not see that as a rhetorical question. Members of the congregation would think that's a question that demands an answer. But the ushers know. That's part of their duty. Ushers and security know that that's a rhetorical question. No one goes out that door. It'd be like me saying, why has that cameraman got that camera off of that tripod and setting it upside down on this floor, and the director saying over the microphone, he's working on it, sir. The question, rhetorical, is, it shouldn't be happening. And there was only one proper answer. It's a mistake, sir, and it won't happen again. That calms me and lets me know that somebody's not run down the gamut. Instead, some smart math know-it-all usher who has followed Jim Mund out. Somebody better have found him by now and told him he's going out the same door Jim Mund went out of. It's a medical emergency, sir. Now, it sounded to me like somebody said it in the congregation, so I said, who said that? Because I thought there was somebody sitting in the congregation that said it. And, of course, this usher was not man enough to say, I said it, sir. He disappeared. Now, there's something the people that know me in private and as a pastor and everywhere else. I hate cowards. Always have. Got it from my granddad. And courage is 90% of faith. This usher burps out, it's a medical emergency, sir. Now, I want to dissect this for you. Oh, and when my wife went out and asked him why he spoke out, he defended himself. Well, the pastor asked me. No, I didn't. Now, you might think that was a general statement that I was making. There are two people in charge. And when I say, why are people going out that door, there's only one person entitled to answer me. Just one. Not every usher like a bunch of turkeys starting to gobble. And I want you to think about this for a minute. You're lucky. God leads me. I have enough spirit of discernment to pull the shell off and get to the reason why this person speaks out. and you're just tough enough to survive it, I'm going to tell you something. I seriously doubt there is a pastor in America that could have survived what happened. In other words, let me pull the ribbons off of it. Calm down, pastor. You're having a temper tantrum, and we've got a medical emergency. Why are you so upset, pastor? I mean, we've got a medical emergency. Well, now, if this usher was so concerned about the medical emergency, how come he didn't speak out when the emergency occurred? Pastor, we got a medical emergency. What better place for a king's house to be and have a heart attack than in Faith Center?
Yes, sir.
And if my prayers can't be effective, I carry nitro pills. And there's a doctor there for me, just in case of emergency, that I can say, get back there. I'm in control of that auditorium on Sunday. Everybody knows that. This usher did not speak up and put me in my place because he was concerned about a medical emergency. He only spoke up to defend himself. Because the emergency happened while my back was turned. And they sneaked the guy out while my back was turned writing on the board. I wasn't even preaching yet. And they lay him down in the foyer, or he fell down, one or the other. And they came and got my doctor and brought him out. And did all of that. And call the ambulance, the wrong place. I want to ask you, considering the ambulance drivers in this town, which is the fastest and easiest directions to give? Down the alley between Olympic and 9th to some undesignated doorway among a whole alley full of doors, or 933 South Broadway with a marquee right over it, right between 9th and Olympic. Come to the front door. Everything that was done was direct. I wish I could give the gestures on the air. Up yours. Violation of rules. And done sneakily. We don't want to interrupt the pastor. What kind of pastor am I and what kind of usher do I have? They must have a lot of faith. Faith Center. The preacher's been healed of cancer. The preacher went through a heart attack himself. The preacher's carrying nitro pills. The preacher's preaching today on I love thee, O Lord, my strength, which includes health. And we got to wait till the pastor's back's turned, sneak him out, send him out an illegal door. And then having done all that sneaky non-faith, insulting to this pastor as if I remember not too long ago when I left, a service went to, you didn't know it, you see me get up and walk out sometimes, don't know why, to a truck and prayed for a man that had a heart attack. I was on the phone this morning before the service, you know, last night at dinner time, with a person I knew was sick in this congregation praying for him. How do you think this pastor feels? And how did this person make this pastor look and this church look? I think most of you that are regulars have been here when I've seen somebody get up and be carried out in service with a medical emergency, and I've stopped and prayed and gone right forward from that moment on. In other words, we cannot interrupt the pastor. For a king's house that's having a heart attack, and as I said to my congregation, you want to carry your heart attack and be sneaked out and not even let the pastor know? And it makes it more ironic. He didn't take the ambulance. He walked away. So something, my prayer that I did pray, or something worked. He walked away. But hold on. I will not let anybody in this congregation color the motives. Yes, the man that I, the usher, head usher that I disciplined, he's got a heart of gold, but he's got a loose mouth. He's still sobbing in the foyer trying to explain he didn't mean. That's an insult. He wasn't disciplined for what he did. He's disciplined because he wouldn't shut his mouth once I started the discipline. I've been telling all of you, an explanation is an excuse. I'm tired of this generation doing what I preached in Romans, using your brain to convince yourself that your sin is really not sin after all. Whatsoever is not of faith is sin. So every one of those ushers sinned. There wasn't a faith act in what they did. And then when busted, a weaker pastor, one without the discernment to see through the facade of explanation, his remarks, whether designed that way or not, would have made a fool of the pastor. And I may be the only pastor that can recover. In other words, you unstable temper tantrum preacher having a fit because we open a door when we got a medical emergency to put somebody in an ambulance. You see the picture? Well, now this is going to be taken wrong. King's House dies and goes to heaven better off. You destroy the image of the pastor, you've destroyed the church. Well, I didn't mean to do it. Well, you did. You meant to open your mouth to justify and explain. I came to town 28 years ago and said, if you've got a monkey occupying the position of a pastor, it's a God-ordained position. I was left out of the loop, as I so often am. A disobedient act created dominoes. And in law, we distinguish between law and equity. In this case, the equity is not even on the side of the disobedient act. Because it was not smart, it was not expedient, and it was not in the best interest of the person having the heart attack, even if we didn't have faith, and even if you didn't have a pastor that could pray, that was not the door to take him out. Even if both doors were wide open, that's not the door to take him out. There's only one reason they took him out that door. They reasoned, maybe we can get him out and pastor won't see it. That's the only reason. I just happened to turn around and be preaching before they got him out. And again, to show how stupid they are, you open the door in the darkened area, it's like shining a flash of light in your eye. Going out the normal way would have thought, number one, any person in my congregation that has a medical emergency sufficient to call an ambulance, you better be interrupting me if my back is turned. You think I can't finish a message and preach a message after I pray for somebody in my congregation? And if God raises them up, that's better than a message. I can say, message just been preached, folks, I'm going home. It was stupid. It was disobedient. It was evil because it was deliberate, wrongful thinking, self-justifying thinking, no faith. I've been angry all afternoon. Have I got nothing in this church after 28 years but a bunch of ushers whose first thought is call the ambulance when they're right in front of the preacher? I thought I just preached on Isaiah 50, shoved the matchbox just a little bit out of reach, and call on the name of the Lord first. So in defiance and violation of what I've been preaching for 18 weeks, forgetting the 28 years, we got to solve this in our flesh, and we got to do it in darkness, and we got to sneak around lest we disturb the pastor. And not one thought. Here's the chance for the whole church to call upon the name of the Lord in a crisis. That in itself was bad enough. But then when busted, to make the pastor look like a ranting and raving maniac who is interrupting his message and having a fit because we opened the door in a medical emergency. What do you think of that? What do you think of it? Say something. It's painful when you're on the hot seat that I can see through things. Thank God for a gift of discernment. I've once said the pastor and teaching office are one and the same with a hyphen. You're not a call pastor if you can't teach. And I doubt you're a domata call teacher if you can't pastor. They're one and the same office, hyphenated, two sides of the same coin. I'm going to add, you can't be an effective pastor if you don't have the gift of discernment. You saw a blatant example of self-justification by an ignoramus. I hope he's listening. An ignoramus who took a stupid pill and didn't have an ounce of the Spirit in him today, who in one blurt-out statement could have forever destroyed the credibility and respect that this congregation has to have for its pastor. Oh, what an ogre. What an ogre. Going to have a fit and discipline people. Sir, we had a medical emergency. Let it sink in. Children of this generation who have been fostered in an atmosphere that has no respect for authority, non-faith, I'll solve it myself. Get the job done attitude led to a disobedient act and when the disobedient act brought a response from the pastor, sir, they're there. Calm down. You nitwit. Don't get so upset. We had a medical emergency. Well, I'd have been impressed if the minute they had the medical emergency, they'd have said, Pastor, we have a medical emergency. You on the page with me?
Yes, sir.
But this incident can only be turned positive if you learn something by it. That's why dozens of people that God called here for a chance to be heroes for God and stand at the judgment seat of Christ, well done, good and faithful servant, and share in rewards beyond their comprehension, at best will limp their way to glory. Failing here, not because they made mistakes. I already said, the deed was already done. The ambulance was called, the person had laid in the foyer, the doctor had come back and recommended an ambulance, and they're out the door and gone. So too late for me to do anything as a matter of faith and prayer except what I did. Apparently, they weren't in the ambulance, because what I'm told, all I've been able to get is that he walked away. Okay. Whether he got okay or whether the prayer we prayed got him okay, nobody will know. I will keep searching the rest of the day to find out how this king's house is. But there are people that have forever lost their place in the kingdom for the same thing you saw today. The deed was done. And every one of those ushers know that door is not to be opened. So when I ask the question, why is that door open? Rhetorically, there's only one answer. It's a mistake, sir, and it won't happen again. Now I know nothing calamitous that's going to get any worse. I can get on with it. And the wrong person spoke up, not the person in charge. That's why people are gone here. Not for mistakes they made. I've had them stand in front of me and cry. I've had them stand in front of me and do everything. I just can't stand it to disappoint you. I can't stand it that you think... I've got to know that you know my motives were good. That's an insult. That's an insult. It's an insult to my discernment. It's an insult to the trust that's supposed to be mutual between us. An insult to your agreement, because I make it very clear. Is there anybody in this room that had to be told today, when you're busted for something, I don't want an explanation. Turn your 2% into 100%. Don't bore me with your motives. That's a given, your motives are right, as far as my discernment can see, or you're out of here. You made a mistake, whatever your intent. Quit making excuses. Because it's nothing but slavery to ego. Face-saving. Jesus thought it was a bear, too, when he first saw it. And the old joke. Obedience is running to the voice of the sayer, not arguing with the sayer and making him listen to you. It was a mistake to open that door. It was a mistake to try to sneak that person out. It was a sin because every act was absent any faith of any kind. And it was an insult to the name on the masthead of this church and an insult to the pastor that you would believe that someone could have a heart attack in my congregation and I would react any way other than with faith and prayer to be so told. And in this case, didn't even have to interrupt the message. Now, I want some reaction so I can figure out how many people are feeling sorry for the usher, because I want to tell you, you're out. So why don't you just call and tell me you're not coming anymore before I throw you out? Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
This is what I have put up with that has crippled this church, is with love as a spiritual father, I have tried to save staff members that would not stop defending themselves. Always their motives were right. Well, I didn't mean to do it. Huh? The father backs over his daughter in an accident and has to explain to his wife he didn't mean to. I mean, the father may be a careless fool, but don't ask him why he did that. Try and figure out if his motive, did you intend to kill her or not? Don't reverse it. Need I say any more?
No, sir.
What I want you to understand is how close we were. Remember, I'm standing on that platform with the whole world looking and listening. And this church and its image is at stake. And one empty-headed, prideful man just calm down, Pastor. He didn't say that, but that's the Pastor, you're being upset, but we had a medical emergency. No, you didn't. A medical emergency had happened long before. You did nothing about it, and you disobeyed and deliberately sneaked around without faith and created the crises, and when I'm busting you up for it, you're making explanations. At the expense of this church, this ministry, and 18 new people that were there this morning in the cathedral that don't have the experience you have with your pastor, that may never return. So this usher could save face. And then as it continued out of some super martyrdom or something of taking blame, I still couldn't get him to shut up. The head usher was sent out of the church because he just wouldn't shut up. For 2,000 years, the Apostle Peter has been exposed to the world, being called Satan by Jesus. I'm telling you, I had a bunch of sinners ushering today. I repeat, whatsoever is not of faith is sin. And when will this congregation step forward and give me a new core of people that will march and keep their mouth shut and come with enthusiasm and love for the pastor and respect for the pastor and take it on the chin if you're out of line and keep smiling and kiss the paddle? Now, I want your responses. If you don't like the way this pastor handles things, I survived. Not many pastors would. Then call me and tell me so I can make sure you don't get any passes. I'm in charge of this church. I'll be in charge of this church if my last message is preached from a hospital bed before I go to glory. Don't ever forget that. If you don't like it, you got two choices. Change and start liking it, or get out. So help me sort it out by getting on the phone today. Get on the telephone. Now I have a message from the couple that went out, the man that was the medical emergency. Doc, we are home. We're sorry for having to leave the service. I'm sorry you had to leave without me laying hands on you and praying before you left. My husband was carried to the ambulance, but he ended up not going to the hospital. Okay. We love you, Doc. The nitro pills worked. We're talking about the messages that I've preached the last few weeks. That's the tragedy. I mean, how can we function if I don't have... I mean, what I'm preaching this morning was trying to get across to you, though you didn't hear it on this show, that God is like a mother as well as a father. I said to my wife going home, too much of fundamentalist preaching has painted God as my granddad, where you'd run from him. Not as a mother that you hurt yourself, you run knowing what her response will be. I stand as the pastor representing both Father and Mother, our God. A heart attack in a service where I'm preaching, you cry out, Pastor, pray for me, like blind Bartimaeus by the roadside. I mean, I want some common sense. Just because you have a nose that's running doesn't mean that you're going to interrupt the message. But somebody having a heart attack that's a faithful king's house like this, and ushers sneak you out so I won't know it? I'm still angry about that. I want to hear from some of you that know why I'm angry. Some of you mothers that somebody, your kid is hurt, and somebody sneaks him out because we can't let her find out because she'll get upset at us for telling her that her kid's hurt. I want a few mothers to say, I'd punch him out for that. Oh, we got to wait until she's not looking, and then we'll sneak her kid out. Help me out. I got to fight for some of this. When some of you are getting gnawed over this, then I can sit back and say, go ahead and fight it out, folks. Now get on the telephone. Lord, I like that song.
Well done,
I like that song. That's my wife singing, and the whole band did a wonderful job. I want you to roll that back. I want to play that again. That was my favorite song on the saxophone. I'll tell you, if anything will get me out with my saxophone, that'll do it. They'll be singing that, and I'll come striding out and play a verse. Play that again. Listen to this. I'm the heart attack guy, Apple Valley. King's House 10,344. That goes way, way back. We're in the 60,000s now. While Melissa was singing, I was having chest pains. I took my nitro pills. The third one didn't work. I waved to the usher and tried to hurry out. That means this was happening while Melissa was singing, so you didn't even have to interrupt the message. And remember, I'm writing on the board, then I call her up again. It was uncanny, the bad timing, because everyone was standing up clapping. I thank you for your teaching and your prayer. See, the King's House was not thinking of himself. He was trying not to disturb. But when you're having a heart attack, you're not always the sanest person in the world. This is part of what I'm dealing with, folks. I've had people that fence me in away from the rest of you. Cowards. Self-serving, Absalomic cowards who would sell the pastor out in a New York minute to make themselves look good to you. I have people that are no longer in this church. They've left. I can't find them. They haven't worked a day since they left. That have stolen money. I have people that are here now that forget the wars when I was occupied from morning to night in fighting these battles we had when I first came here to keep the church from bankruptcy and fighting the government and its encroachments and those constitutional battles for every church. The buck stops at my desk. My wife, for example, now is in charge of paying the bills, and she has a nice way of saying she won't do penance for what people didn't do when she was here, wasn't here. Well, I've been badmouthed through the congregation by people with the same spirit as that usher to justify themselves. It goes with the territory when you've been around 28 years. It's like teenagers sitting around talking about the old man. Because I'm going to take this church the way God wants it to go. And carnal people backslidden around me that want to be liked. The only thing I'm sad about my wife now, she don't care. This is the sweetheart I've been looking for 66 years. That's when I first met her. She don't care if you think she's the bitch of the century. She's going to have respect for me, for the pastor, and this church, and she is determined, if necessary, to be hated that I don't have to be. Now, I don't like it because I love her. I'd rather be hated than have her, but there are people that have destroyed the image of the pastor and painted me as an ogre and separated the man from the message. Oh, great teacher, but hard to work with. I don't want to chastise this person because I'll finish reading the message. There's a lot of love here. But somehow the image has gotten around. How do you think I feel? That someone would think they could have a heart attack in my congregation and not say, "Pastor, pray for me." Listen to this. Thank God. This person's a victim of ushers that should have said, "Sir, we're calling the ambulance, but the pastor can do more for you than the ambulance can. We're going to interrupt the service." And if any of you think that I would be offended that a member of this congregation having a heart attack interrupted my message to ask for prayer, you need to fall on your face and repent for the attitude you have entertained. Yeah, I'm tough against evil, tough against sin. So was God. He loved the sinner. Thank you for your teaching and your prayer, because I'm okay now. Your teaching and prayers, I know, have saved my life many times. This is our 22nd year as King's Houses, and we love you so much. And some egocentric strut-around peacock of a loudmouth, diarrhea-of-the-mouth usher, and all who cooperated. I chewed the doctor out that was sneaked out, and he gave an excuse, and I'm about to call him back. Because, in fact, I know I'm going to call him back. So if he's listening now, he better get ready for a call. I said, you better never get out of your chair in this congregation again to go tend somebody without me telling you. And his excuse was that he thought it was coming from me. Well, he didn't ask the question. Did Doc order this? The whole conspiracy was to keep me from knowing the guy was having a heart attack. And if that doctor's listening, I'm going to deal with him this afternoon, because don't give me excuses. I don't care what you thought. You didn't make sure you knew. See how subtle excuses are? I've just got to somehow make my black a little bit gray. I wouldn't mindlessly, I wouldn't deliberately disobey. No, I just mindlessly don't make sure I'm obeying. Go find another pastor. Understand, you are saints still needing perfection. Thank God. He's all right now. All right. You know, I love my dad. My dad, everybody loved Dad. He spent his whole life making people love him. That was his whole motive in life. He wanted to be loved. I love him, man. I love Dad. There wasn't a fair bone in Dad's body. Dad, if Dad apologized to me 5 times in my entire life and his, I would be surprised. I think that's a high figure. And when he did apologize, he just did it to make peace. He still knew he was right. And psychologically, you know, you couldn't get to him in this corner. Because he really believed he was right. And you can't hide, I can't hide the love I have for my dad. And I couldn't, you know, I could do no wrong in his eyes. But he'd sell me out in a New York minute to make a plumber happy that came. He just wanted to be liked. My mom was tough, but she loved me. Dad loved to be loved by me. He loved me too, but he loved to be loved by me more than being willing to love me enough to do what should be done. You ought to be 73 years old and know all these things. And Dad didn't have a fair bone in his body. If he liked you, you could do no wrong. You came in his house and told something some magic was worked. That thing got in your pocket. You didn't put it there. And you ever got on his bad side, the angel Gabriel could dust you off and bring you to him, and he still would not forgive you. He was an 8th Cherokee Indian. You get on his bad side, that's it, man. My mother was fair to a fault. She'd have made a great referee. And, you know, I didn't know it when I was a boy, but I watched it as the years went on. And 3 churches as I grew up, and Dad and Mom pastored. When we first went to the church, everybody loved Dad, and they were sort of afraid of Mom. Because Dad, they came to him with a problem, he said, there, just pray about it, and smile and go on. Mom would tell you the truth. It takes 6 months or a year in the church when people had a real problem. They needed the truth. They go to mom. And if I have a problem, they'll go, daddy, son. You know. It'll be okay. Hi there, Jim. While he's trying to deal with the problem with me. Hi there, Jim. The plumber goes by. He was Mr. Pat, most popular man in town. Everybody loves Pop. Even this church, the old timers. But when Mom got up to preach, she told you something. Dad lifted you up and blessed you. You never hear Dad preach, you don't feel good. Mom get done, you might go out saying, well, I'm going to change. And then it became my lot when I got my faith back to do Dad's dirty work for him. I mean, I spent the years as his assistant making everybody hate me so they'd love him. Dad couldn't handle it. He was pastoring his home church, went back to third church he pastored, went to Live Oak. His successor became the mayor of the town. 10% of the city was in the church. Came to Gridley, 13 members, same thing. Then he went back to his home church, Orville. He was Ted. Everybody knew him there. When he had rheumatic fever, one of the deacons, and the deacon's wife was the treasurer of the church, and that deacon had carried Dad around when he was before he went into a coma and helped him as a friend. They had hunted and fished together, and they were, and Woody, carried him around and helped him when he was sick. And Woody was the song leader of the church. And I used to, you know, a teenager during my years when I was wrestling with my faith. And I'd look at this guy lead the singing. He had a kind of a corkscrew like a tail of a pig. When he'd lead the singing, he'd lead it like this. And he looked kind of like a pig, too. He was porky, arrogant. And there's a whole bunch of them in that church that knew Dad as a deacon. Never killing him. I told you about the guy that was the scion of the charter member of the church that helped found it, that taught the junior boys. And I went to him and said, this is what the teachers are going to do. But it's morally wrong for anybody to teach these kids that won't make this commitment. Oh, you ain't going to get anybody to do that. I don't do that. It wasn't that much. Simple commitment, you know, just don't fail to show up to teach a class because it's duck season and the weather is good for the ducks flying low. You're going to take this responsibility and you're going to forget the word volunteer. You make a commitment, you're going to keep it. Ah, well, I can't. I ain't going to do this. You ain't got anybody. Who you? Nobody's going to do this. I said, yes, they will. No. He was older than me. He'd watch me grow up in the church. But I was right. And he was wrong. And I said, yes, I do. I've told you this story. But I'll teach the whole class from the nursery to the adults. But this is what the commitment will be. By the way, he's the guy that gave that $100,000 check years later that brought me out of the valley. He followed me around all over the world as a farmer. I've told you that story. He just followed me around all over the world. I had fine things for him to do in India. While I'm trying to preach revival, I'm sending him out to teach him how to irrigate. I did what Dad didn't have the heart to do. I put these arrogant, self-serving, overfat, rusty, don't want to do it, egotistical Christian fixtures in their place. And the ones that straightened out got to start over, and the ones that didn't sit on the bench. I did that dirty work for him. I'm tired of being given no opportunity to express the love that I have because of evil people that have moved into positions and have less respect for the pastor than a man on the street. And I'm about done, but I'm telling you, they're going, I'm not. I'm tired of these people that paint me as some incendiary ogre. Oh, I'm incendiary when the cause justifies. But how dare some mental midget with the spirit of Miriam and Joab think that God would flow through me with the spirit of His Word if I were the kind of person that some of these people who are justifying their own failures have painted me to be. And some of you evil people need to fall on your face this afternoon and repent. Because you have listened to people tell you things about the pastor that is not based on your experience, and you have believed their lies. That makes you a sinner. You have thought evil of God's man. I'm tough enough, in charge enough, blessed by God enough, healed by His strength to survive. You better understand that some of you, these words are designed to save your miserable soul and stop the evil gossip that's going on and the judging of God's man. That if I were guilty, you are sinning to do, and I'm not guilty. And I will not pull a Samuel who stands in front of a miserable, low-down bunch of Israelites and ask them to bring forth the witnesses of any fault that he has had in leading them when he laid the foundations that carried Israel through two kingdoms. I'll just eliminate you and start over again. I ain't going nowhere. And if this is a game of who's going to outlast who, I'll be here when you're gone. I think that what happened today, the devil intended for evil, that God has entered in because it revealed a cancer that needed to be exposed, that anybody would think in the midst of 24 messages on from faith to faith, and would sneak a king's house of 22 years, carry him out with a heart attack, and not interrupt the pastor to pray, is a cancerous sickness that had better change and real fast. I repeat, I don't want to be interrupted by somebody with a snotty nose. But a heart attack, a stroke. What's the matter with you people? Any of you? That would not run to the voice of the sayer. Because I am his sayer. It's speaking his words of faith, and would try to sneak somebody out, because I'll get mad if I'm interrupted. And then the sickness of rationalization and self-defense when you're busted. Learn by it. Get on the phone. As I said, get mad. Mama, why are you creating this commotion in my house? Well, we have a medical emergency with one of your kids, and we're sneaking him out because we didn't want you to get upset. I got a mother here who says, I got five kids. They got me, I'd kill them. That made me feel good. That's when I started feeling better. I want to hear from some more of you that feel that way. Get on the telephone. I have the caller in Sierra Madre. I'm a nurse. It's refreshing to see a pastor with faith who will interrupt his message to pray for someone and really believe. Keep on keeping on. I'm not a king's house. My friends said you were a wise man. Way to go. Palmdale, you're right. Faith equals courage, and we are a faith church. I'm still upset. I'm going to stay upset till I hear from more of you. I'm still upset. This is the thing I've been fighting. And you know how Doc is. This is the image that's being portrayed about me by the very people that ought to be protecting and uplifting the image that the pastor came here to restore. The ushers and the doctor. Should have said, you're not leaving here in this ambulance until we interrupt the pastor and tell him the king's house is here that's just had a heart attack. Someone says, oh, you have a right to be angry. They threw your teaching right back in your face. I mean, I wonder how many people in the hospital today wish they could have been in the service today. You know, some ministries only will show people after they've been healed. They don't need prayer after they've been healed. Jesus even said that. Strong don't need a physician. I'm not afraid to stop preaching and pray for somebody that's having a heart attack. I'm not going to pull any foolish stunt and not call the ambulance. But at least I can pray for him before he gives me ambulance. But that's not what I'm addressing. I'm addressing the attitude of people that are supposed to be an extension of my ministry. That's what these ushers are. You represent me. And if you're not for me, you're against me. And they're obviously not for me. They're projecting a view that doesn't exist. They're going to be the nice guys and shield you from the ogre. How many different ways can I say this before it really sinks in? I start having it playing back to me. I start in a little bit. I read some of these messages. Here's Burbank. Pastor, I'm sure glad you don't let the sun set on your anger. Very great to know where you stand at the end of the day. I'm going to tell you, those ushers that I've banned had better figure out either go to another world. Don't ever think of coming back. Or convince me you see what you did. And don't bother me with your motives. Because your motives are bad. Just that simple. Your motives are bad. But I don't need to discuss it. I got plenty of years of proof. Fall down 1,000 times, you get a point in the right direction, I give you another chance. But no more point in the other direction with the baggage of self-justification. No, you're wrong, you're 100% wrong, and you were wrong with your big mouth. The tongue is the hardest member to tame. And this generation is fostered in mouthing rationales for their behavior. And I don't want some bleepity bleep, cue card, polished act of repentance. No. I see I was used of the devil and opened my big mouth. And with a pastor of lesser reputation, credibility, ability, toughness, and discernment, I could have forever destroyed the trust the congregation has to have in him. In other words, I won't cover Noah up, I'll strip the side of the tent open. I won't cover him up, I'll strip the tent open. Noah was wrong. I wasn't wrong. Noah was wrong. Ham was more wrong. And what might have been a mindless act, a faithless act that is sin, a bad habitual pattern from a group of people that have gotten too comfortable in their position and think they know this pastor better than they do, and who are so used to covering their asteroid, they don't realize that the primary motivation of their act was to avoid getting in trouble and somehow solve the problem their way and avoid trouble. But then when busted, the heart attack, everything else changed. You were willing to expose the pastor in front of the world and make him the fool, if you could, to justify your wrongful action. That's pretty horrifying. Beaumont, California. Doc, you want a mother's opinion? Well, my son was shot. No one told me till the next day. I know exactly how you feel. Chino Hills, Pastor, I'm on your side. I'm a mother, and I'm getting madder by the minute with that usher. Please let me be the first in line to punch him out. And when my wife got on to him for speaking up, he argued. The pastor asked me. I want to tell you something. My wife is me. And I take a lot. You bother her. Okay. Because she's only acting for me and for the good of this church. In fact, I want her to sing again. So, you know what I think? I want to know something, Brian. Can you make a CD-ROM of this song right off of that tape?
Yes, sir.
You can?
Yes, sir.
How soon can you have it?
This week, sir.
This week?
Yes, sir.
I may like to have a CD-ROM of this song. I think that's a public domain song. I'm older than copyright law. And I played that as a teenager. So it's got to be public domain when they ring the golden bells. I'm going to make a CD-ROM of that. I'll check with my lawyers. If I can't sell it, I'll give it away. Up to a limit. Play that song again. Well, I think that's better than I want to know. So I'm going to play that again. But not yet. Not yet. Huntington Beach. Yes, as a mother, I'd be mad if someone did that with my child. Makes me equally mad. A lot of them are going to... If I don't play it again, a lot of them are going to plug a tape in and make a record of it. And then in case I don't give the CD-ROM away, they don't have to buy one. I know. That's why you need a pastor. Makes me equally mad that they painted that picture with my pastor, because I know he loves his flock. I don't blame you for being angry. In this day and age, if an unauthorized door opens, you can assume a gunman is coming through it. That was a foolish move on the part of the ushers to put things out of control like that. You know, like I say, it doesn't even make sense. There's only one reason they did it that way. They didn't want me to see him go toward the other door. Everything was done to keep me from knowing this was happening. And that's a terrible, terrible non-faith attitude for the pastor. That don't even make sense if they're throwing a guy out that came in to shoot me. I will rejoice and get more anointing as I see him carry him out. Don't sneak him out. I want to see him going out in handcuffs. I want people in this church to quit profiling me. Get over the Nazareth spirit. Isn't this the carpenter's son? Just because you've known me 28 years, I've learned several languages since you knew me. I'm still growing. The Apostle Peter, the night of the crucifixion, is not the same person who preached on the day of Pentecost. God help the church that's got the same pastor that came 28 years ago. I teach the same truth. But I hope that I've gotten a little closer to God. And if you don't know it, you've got blinders on. I wish I could say what I want to say. These asteroid orifices that haven't grown a centimeter in the last 10 years... want to think that I'm the same. I mean, there are people that didn't make it with me here 10 years ago who still think that I'm the same person they didn't make it with. Well, I'm just as right as I was then. And with your attitude, you would last a shorter time this time than you did then. Does that change? But with your judgmental attitude, you wouldn't get in the gate now. So I've changed. Some things I won't tolerate now. This church is moving forward. I didn't take this mountain to stand back and look at it. I wrestled all these months. It's a pretty big project at 73. 20 years from now, I'll look back and say that was a breeze. Now listen to this, Apple Valley. This is the heart attack man. It's King's House 10,344. Thank you, Pastor, for caring. Thank you for your prayers. My husband will see the doctor tomorrow and will let you know what's going on. We love you more than anything in the world. Will you pray with me that the doctor will find nothing tomorrow? Miracle Services, we used to call it, Shalom, is coming up next Sunday. You're not making very many reservations. I think I'm entertaining you with my anger today. I'm about 200 short of the reservations I need for the cathedral next Sunday. And the reservations for our meeting around the table of the Lord, what I'm calling Shalom. I want it to get attention. It's like, I remember when I came here, I named the duet, the singers, in the singular, the dove. Like the secular band, The Who. Shalom. That's what happens next Sunday night at 8 p.m. at King's House 1. You better get your reservations in, and for next Sunday. And get your VTRs, get your record players ready. And play that song again. Pray, pray, pray for 10:03:44. Monrovia, dear Pastor Dr. Gene Scott, thank you, sir, for pointing out how stupid and evil we are by making excuses. Yeah. I mean, there are lots of people, as I said, will limp their way, if they make it at all, into glory. Because they wouldn't stop making excuses. What these ushers did was stupid and evil, and you're right to be mad. They're the evil ones, not you. You know what's interesting? Maybe it's come. But I haven't done any apologies from the ushers. Don't you think that's interesting? Well, I'd like to buy a copy of this song. This sounds amazing. I agree with that. And Mira Loma says, I'm pretty bleeped off myself. It's sure hard to stay mad when I hear Melissa sing this song. It's helping me, too. That's why I'm playing it. Springfield, Iowa. Thank you, Pastor, for telling those bleep holes to stop. To stop bleeping with my brothers and sisters out there. You're the coolest doc. Thank you for the teaching. See, when I can transfer this anger to you, then I can sit back and laugh at your reactions. You're making me happy now. Lockport, New York. I want you to listen very closely to this, folks. Write down King's House 55,509. God knows who they are. As we watched this afternoon, it seemed like a slap as I was being encouraged in the faith situation. I've been struggling with the last few weeks. My doctor informed me I now have prostate cancer. He wants me to have the operation for removal. I have to work hard to believe this stuff, and I do not allow many in on how I'm going to work this out. I called in for prayer, and I'm at a crossroads to which way I will go. I told my doctor, we are, that's my wife and I, going out to our church in California. It's their church, though they're in Lockport, New York. And we'll give him, the doctor that is, a decision on whether or not when we return. Pastor, we will be out there as Voices of Faith this coming Wednesday, the 15th of January, if you will allow us this honor. Absolutely. We called in for reservations for both services on the 19th, and thank you for the true love you've shown for the ones our Lord has given you to be domata over. I think you're doing the right thing to come out here in the miracle service, and I'm calling all of you to pray for this. King's House 55,509. God will show you. I'm not a pastor that says, don't ever go to a doctor. If you don't have the faith and the certainty that came to me, but remember, I went for the scan and there was nothing found in my body, though the doctor said it was slim and none. And I came back and said, as we sat there and all the pictures were around the wall of the scan, And he said, "I have good news. The cancer is contained in your prostate, and we can cure you. We can take it out. We operate immediately. We can cure you." And, of course, they play down the side effects. And I said, "Well, can you show me where the cancer is in my prostate?" "Oh, no. Too microscopic." I said, "Well, how do you know? You told me it was slim and none. Didn't go to the rest of my body. How do you know God hasn't taken the cancer out of the prostate, too?" And he sort of smiled and said, "Well, we're facing, well, we don't, statistics go out the window. But in essence, every minute you wait, those cells can escape the shell of the prostate and invade the rest of your body, the lymph glands." And well, I said, "What are you basing it on?" He said, "Well, the biopsy of last week." "Well, do another biopsy." "I can't. These are internal wounds. Take 6 months for them to heal. We can't do a biopsy until the wounds heal from the biopsy we just did." I said, "Okay. You ain't touching me with a knife until we do a biopsy. I'll be back in 6 months." I see them coming to a station break. I'm going to talk right through it. They don't need to make any announcements on the half hour. And I went to the congregation, and I kept taking communion, and I kept digging into Isaiah 53, but I didn't abandon intelligence. I researched in case that I decided and came back for the biopsy and decided to go for surgery. I located the best one in America, the one that I would have utilized contacts that I had in the newspaper world in Missouri to get with a doctor in St. Louis that had done the most operations. I researched every method, the seed implants, the surgery, because they cut all the nerves, and the particular surgeon I'd located and was able to go, if I wanted to go, was the best recognized in the nation, done over 3,000 of the surgeries, and having the least amount of side effects. I researched Loma Linda, the seed implants, the surgery, and the proton therapy, the stuff that they've got it down. It's under out here in Loma Linda. They have government grants, and they've experimented with this kind of surgery that's so accurate they can actually take the gland out and not have to cut all the nerves. Doctors will say there's still not enough research and evidence and articles on that because they exist on government grants, so they're not going to publish the results that would stop the grants as long as they can avoid it. And I had made the decision that if I went for surgery, that's the way I was going, to Loma Linda, not even the best in the nation in St. Louis. My wife got every book that could be found on natural cures to reverse, and there have been many cases of reversing with just simply changing your eating habits. America's been dominated with knife and drugs. And only now are people in the medical profession beginning to recognize there are natural curative powers to reverse the terrible habits of a lifetime. We went on macrobiotic diets. Not really a diet, just a change of eating style. I did something else while I waited for the 6 months. I took a PSA test every week. And I'm taking communion every day and calling on people to pray. And I then got from faith to faith. I began to get the little evidences from God that He was doing more than having taken it out of my body as the scan showed. My PSA started dropping 25% and 30% every week, and I showed it to you every Sunday. Until when it came time for the biopsy, the doctor refused to do it, because at that time, though it went from there on down further to 0.4, at that time it dropped from the 10.6 to 1.75. And he said, there's no way you've got a double 10 Gleason and cancer in there with a 1.75 PSA. Come back in 6 months more, then go down to 0.4. And all the symptoms disappeared. And I'm healed, and I've stayed healed. Faith is not foolishness. You put God first, you use your brains, you don't panic. That's the reverse of faith. You research it in every way. You practice faith, you take communion 3 and 4 times a day, and give God a chance as old Jacob didn't believe his son was on the throne when they came back from Egypt. There's a phrase I once preached a message on, until he saw the wagons. And that little wagon load that came from Egypt, he knew that his boys didn't have whatever it took to get those wagons, and that those wagons, until he saw the wagons, he didn't believe his son was on the throne. I saw a wagon every week as the PSA dropped and my faith intensified. In other words, I believe God can direct the knives of a surgeon. But you got to be able to say, having done all, therefore stand. It's very subtle. Sometimes faith is disguised fear. It's fear wearing a mask. I'm afraid to find out what's wrong with me, so I won't go to a doctor because I have faith. I'll stare the condition in the eye and say, I now can call God by name that fits the situation. The doctor is like the matchstick. You're not dying with prostate cancer overnight. And the doctor is like the matchbox. Shove it out of the way a little bit. And call on the name of the Lord. Do your research. Find the best medical and alternative cures. And submit yourself to God and let Him take charge and have the guts to do a PSA test every week. And if God is honoring your faith, it'll start dropping. Or it'll fixate. And you're right to be at this healing service. And I'm saying the same to the man who had the heart attack this morning. Whatever your doctor says to you, tell him you're going to be at the healing service 19th. Like I got the message that Pete North had essentially started to break in his faith and give up. I sent the message back, and he was there on that Sunday. I said, Pete North's going to be in the miracle service on the 19th. Go out swinging with faith. I've said it, and I'll say it again. I will probably, if he's at the gate, I will probably hit Peter in the mouth with the follow-through of my swing as I go out, believing God, the hour that God takes me home if I'm sick. I'm still going to be believing God can heal. And when I hit Peter in the mouth, I'll say, well, he just healed me. And that's what made the punch land so solid. You understand me? Pray for this King's House, 55,509. Come on, get on the telephone. Make your reservations. Enid, Oklahoma. That good. I'm finding them in Enid, Oklahoma. Doc Scott, I'm a Methodist, and I've always believed in faith. This thing the ushers did is terrible. I'm 83 years old, and I've had illnesses that God has healed. There's no place for fear in this walk of faith. Preach on, buddy. Well, here's a nice usher apologizing and gives me his name. I was the usher who brought the king's house out and was the one who went and got the doctor. You didn't have the right to do that. You need to apologize. You didn't have the right to do that. And whoever's in charge of the altar, ushers is, you know, there's a street name for a man that's not a man. You know what it is? Yeah, he's got the same letter as Peter and Paul. That's what the head usher was. You can all say it to your television screen at home, get away with it. I'll give you a dispensation. Just look at the television screen and say, that usher was a... You'll make me feel better. I mean, the head usher lets this usher do that. Doc, I'm calling for victory. This child of yours would rather have your prayer than anything else. And here's Pasadena. I think, sir, you should do a whole album of Mrs. Scott. She just gets better every week. Well, I agree with that. Myrtle Point, Oregon. I'm a father of three children, and my kids know that if anything like that happened to them, their dad would go crazy. I'd be kicking ass and getting down names. P.S., there is no way Melissa could be a bitch. I stand corrected. A good correction. Come on now, get on the telephone. I'm in good mood now, don't get me mad again. Watsonville, I love you, Pastor. I'm a very lucky Christian. I know you love us and would lay down your life for this congregation. You've proved this many times. I'm impressed with you. How you handle this situation. I'm glad you're finding all the cancer in your ministry. I am, and I'm going to get it out. You know, after that scene and the usher's stupidity, I still had to preach. Thank God he helped. From the doctor. I'm calling to kiss the paddle and thank you for giving it to me. I apologize and accept 100% responsibility for any action or lack of any action I took. Thank you for teaching me. You're welcome. That's the kind of response I expect from people that are right. See, this is what makes me so angry about people that want me to listen to them explain their motives. Good people will never be tempted to do something bad. The devil will always come as he did to Jesus, disguising as an angel of light the temptation as something good. There is no pain that I can explain, including heart attack and cancer, no pain I've borne over the years that matches having to chew into people for doing a good thing the wrong way. And then having to listen to them tell me that they intended to do a good thing. What they did was good. Saul. That's Saul. A sacrifice had to be offered before they went to war and the enemy's charging down. And Samuel was late. Duddy, duddy old man just walks slower than he used to. He was late. And Samuel knew how to offer the sacrifice, and like Romans says, that Ahmet know your side of us, and what Reinhold Niebuhr said that I've quoted 1,000 times, we have to convince ourselves our wrong is not really wrong. So we use our brain to convince ourselves that wrong is right. The devil will tempt you to do something good in a disobedient way. And for somebody who cares, a carnal hireling will say, well, the job was done. The end justifies the means. That's what this generation was educated into. The end justifies the means. I have people that have listened to me for years and then quit listening. I've been saying the same thing for 28 years. Better not have the job done than have it done the wrong way. With God, the end is not as important as the starting point. God can get his job done. Why does he even let us participate? He can speak and get it done. The only thing he can't create is faith and trust. He can create obedience. He has that in, I guess, because a third of the angels rebel, so maybe there's an angel there too. But to get love and trust, he's got to turn freedom loose, the measure of freedom. And to the degree he eliminates the freedom, to that degree the trust is less a free act. He wants obedience in the meaning of that word, the hearing of faith, trust. Now, any good person is going to be tempted to do something good the wrong way or for a wrong reason. So don't bore me with your defense that your intentions were good. You wouldn't be here. The devil's not even going to try to tempt you. I want to destroy the image of the pastor. That's why I'm here. Be my guest and try it. If that attitude, they'd come in. You remember the guy that we carried out, had to carry him over the heads of the people. They came to challenge me in the service once. I ain't trouble with that kind of people. I just got my gun permit renewed. The chief came down and said, after I'd emptied three guns and says, how do you do? Well, he can shoot better than me, the lieutenant said. I don't have any trouble dealing with the enemy. The pain are these well-intentioned people that block themselves out from learning because they've got to defend their intentions while they stumble along in their Jacobite methods. Yeah, God's a God of Jacob. But eventually, if he has to cripple you, if he still wants you and your motives are right, you're going to become Israel, God governed. Don't bore me with your motives. But thanks be to God, I was able to preach this morning. And you ushers that are apologizing, don't underestimate me with pallid out words. You're going to say something that lets me know you understand. You didn't come to do your job with sweat on your palms and a sense of honor and an Aaron and her attitude. You got too comfortable. And you better erase the board of your mind that you think you understand your pastor. You think you understand God completely? I made you understand him a little better, but I don't understand him completely. I don't put God in a box. Since God's still dealing with me, and I'm your domata, and he's leading me, you better figure out he ain't going to let me be put in your box either. I'm feeling better. I'm getting pretty good messages here. Can't read some of them because it'd be all bleeps. Get on the telephone. That was an interesting message. Diamond Bar, California. This King's House, 18,309, so that goes back 20 years. I remember a service at the Shrine Auditorium, and there was a guy about four or five rows back twitching. You walked over and just stared at him and cast the devil out of him. That's what some of the old-timers can remember. Altadena, Pastor, I work with an associate. She's a single mom. Her daughter got injured at school, but they didn't want to call her mom. Who has the right to take your doctor? What if you needed him? I love how God's Spirit flows through you and the way you handle things. Boise, Idaho. Pastor, you're absolutely right. See, this is a sample of how widespread what went on was seen. Now, most pastors would have said, oh my, I'm sorry, I didn't know there was a medical emergency. Oh my, let's pray, folks. And the usher would have, I straightened the pastor out. And not in your lifetime or mine. Pastor, you're absolutely right. That was a total lack of faith and needs strong correction, and we're behind you all the way. We'll be sending in tithes and first fruits this week. We love you. Guardian, I just got home 5 minutes ago because I was in a car accident. That's why I got home 5 minutes ago. I'm a mother and grandmother. I'm in 100% agreement with what you said. I'm mad at the usher. I would want your prayers if I got sick. Well, I guess that they're not hurt very bad from the accident, or they'd be asking for prayers. Thank God the angel went in front of them. Now, I know some people would say, well, he could have kept me from having a wreck. He kept you from getting killed. That's good enough. Pastor, I'm on this battlefield with you. It's the highest of all honors to be part of this ministry, and I'm offended at this idiot who judged the situation through his carnality. You know, my people talk plain, don't they? Can you imagine the kinds of messages that would come from other ministries? I'm praying that God omniscient will spread his love abroad. And I've always understood the first thing to ask is, does Pastor know, do we have his authority? We made it through, absolutely. I'm a mother of five, and if any bleeping idiot tried that bleep with me, I'd want to kill him. Well, praise the Lord for such a congregation. Get on the telephone.